From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And tonight, at last, they meet just under an hour from now. President Bush and his Democratic challenger, Senator John Kerry, will square off on the campus of the University of Miami in the first of three debates. Most voters appear to have made up their minds in this year's presidential contest, but a swath of still persuadable Americans could make all the difference on November 2nd. Going into tonight's contest, a new Los Angeles Times poll has the president holding a 5-point lead over his Democratic challenger among likely voters. Just how important are these debates tonight? A CNN USA Today Gallup poll shows 18% of registered voters say how the candidates perform at the podium could make a difference in how they vote. Their clarity, their honesty, their policies, and their charisma. Tonight, the contenders debate foreign policy and homeland security. On the campaign trail, Kerry has been sharpening his attack on the president.
I want to make it clear to all Americans that my highest priority will be to hunt down, to fight, find, kill, or capture the terrorists, but I will do it in a way that brings the world to our side and makes America safer.
For his part, President Bush stands his ground on his decision to go to war in Iraq and not changing course.
You cannot lead if you don't know where you stand. I'm going to continue to speak as clearly as I can and tell the people what I believe, and I'm not going to change positions when times get tough.
This hour on Point, round one of the presidential debates. They're coming up at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Put yourself in the moderator's chair and give us your best question for the candidates. Take your best shot. What do you need to hear from Bush tonight? What do you need to hear from Kerry? What do you expect to get? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from the campus of the University of Miami in Coral Gables, Florida, is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time Magazine. Karen, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So what's the scene down there? Set the stage. What's the room look like where these two men will meet?
Well, it is a big, you know, auditorium. I think it is normally used as a basketball court. And when I was in there a little while ago, the two lecterns are there on the stage, and there on top of each of the lecterns is the very controversial little black box with lights on it that will actually make it clear to the viewing audience when the candidates have run over their time. This is something, of course, that was insisted upon in the pre-debate negotiations by the Bush campaign. The Kerry campaign agreed to it reluctantly, and then today came and tried to argue once again to get these little timing lights taken off the lecterns. The sense, I guess, here being that, you know, of the two candidates, it's John Kerry who's most likely to be running over his allotted time.
Karen, you've been following this campaign so closely. We've appreciated all your contributions. You followed the negotiations that went on to set up the framework for these debates tonight, and that framework is very finely negotiated and very rigid. Can you explain it to us so that we'll understand what's going on and why when the debates begin?
Well, the worst part of it, I think, in my view, is the fact that the two candidates are practically forbidden to engage each other. The time is very limited for them to make their answers. They are allowed no direct questions of each other, and then rebuttal is limited to something, I believe it's 30 seconds. So, you know, I'm putting a lot of hope in the moderator, Jim Lehrer, to sort of force this into, you know, an actual engagement by the two of them. Because I think you lose a lot if what you have is basically, you know, two guys standing there side by side giving dueling speeches.
So 90 minutes in total, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Jim Lehrer from PBS NewsHour as the moderator. And I'm looking here at some more of these details of the negotiated agreement. The candidates get 2 minutes to answer a question from Lehrer. The other candidate then gets 90 seconds to respond. And Jim Lehrer, the moderator, may extend the topic, as you say, 30 seconds more for each candidate at his discretion. It's a very, very tight format. Is this tighter than it's been in past debates?
It is. This is a sort of the continuation of a trend, but I think this is absolutely the tightest format that we have ever seen. And again, this was something that, at least according to my reporting, was primarily negotiated by the Bush campaign. The Kerry campaign was very anxious for there to be a third debate, which the Bush campaign agreed to, but the price of it were these very, you know, severe restrictions on actual exchanges.
Now, the candidates cannot ask each other direct questions. All questions will come from the moderator in all three of these debates. Is that right, Karen?
That's right. However, it is interesting. In the fine print of the agreement, they do allow rhetorical questions. So I can't quite decide what that means, but it's in there.
Rhetorical questions, but on the other hand, no challenges. They can't say, you know, President Bush or Senator Kerry, will you say right now here on this stage, will you make a commitment to this or that? I think those are explicitly ruled out here.
Those are absolutely explicitly ruled out. Now, of course, you know, we don't know what happens if one of these guys just decides to break the deal, you know, whether there would be a price paid for that or whether, you know, the viewing audience would just breathe a big sigh of relief.
No cheering or booing, at least by the agreement. Who's going to be in the hall tonight, Karen?
Each of the campaigns had a certain number of tickets that they could give out, and you will see a lot of very big political donors sitting there in that office. There will be a lot of University of Miami students, and, you know, basically it's an audience of students and partisans.
And the candidates' families, we hear, sitting in each of them sitting in the front row, right in the candidates' line of sight, so that's who they'll often be looking at.
Yeah, we can assume. And meanwhile, over here in the filing center where I am, every political operative I think I have who is living and thing is walking around and getting prepared to do the post-debate spin, because as the example of Al Gore and George Bush's debate in 2000 taught us, often the debate is played over the few days after it is over that really determines who wins and who loses.
And Karen, as a reporter who's followed this campaign so closely, how do you see the political dynamic of this debate tonight? We're going to get into many aspects of it, but just who has what on the line here, and how is that army of pundits set up to interpret what happens?
Well, I think John Kerry has a lot more that he's got to do tonight. And, you know, he's the challenger. He's behind in the polls. And in our latest Time magazine poll, something like 1 in 5 voters say they still don't know enough about John Kerry to even know what they think of him. So he has got a lot. He's got a lot on the line here. However, I'm really interested, having watched a lot of videos of both of these men's past debates, in seeing George Bush for the first time in a situation where he actually goes into a debate with a record to defend as opposed to being the challenger. And I think that, you know, that could also set up an entirely different dynamic. But certainly, you know, their past debates would suggest that these are both very accomplished debaters.
Well, it should be a fascinating 90 minutes, and we'll be thinking of you right there in the hall. Karen Tumulty, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine. We are talking tonight about the Bush-Kerry debate, debate number 1 of 3. We'll start at 9 o'clock Eastern Time tonight. We look at many aspects of what's going to unfold in that debate tonight, what we can anticipate, what we can't anticipate. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm joined right now from Washington by James Fallows, national editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jim Fallows, thanks so much for being with us.
Good evening. My pleasure.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, by our On Point News analyst, Jack Beatty. Jack, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, hello to you, Tom, and hello, Jim. Great to have you on the show again.
Nice talk with you, Jack.
So a lot to look at here tonight. Jim Fallows, you've been looking at these two men and their debating records for some time now, and you remind us that whatever the talk and expectation tonight, these are, in a way, both unbeaten debating champions. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is when I started looking into this, you know, these 6 or 7 months ago, I think the expectation was that George Bush, who had been recently so terrible in his unscripted performances on Meet the Press and the press conferences, the point I was trying to make is that actually when it came to the work of debate, he always caught people by surprise. He always went in as the underdog. He always worked very hard. And he always had a very crafty understanding of what these interchanges were about. They weren't about, you know, really addressing the opponent's logic. They were putting forward your case and putting forward your personality. And he's has been very good at doing both those things. His record might be catching up with him now, and as Karen was saying, he's never had to defend an actual administrative record before, with the exception of a relatively easy reelection run in Texas. So I think his tried-and-true practice of having two or three main points and going to them again and again and again is what we'll see and what Senator Kerry will try to work on.
And what do you expect from Senator Kerry this evening?
Senator Kerry has been fairly skillful in the past in having an attacking courtroom, prosecutorial type approach. He is somewhat hamstrung by the rules that don't permit him to directly address the president and constrain the time. But I think that he will find it effective, as you were mentioning earlier, to have rhetorical questions. You know, what the American public wants to know is this. You know, we're all waiting for an answer on that. And I think that's a way he can get the answers, get the questions on the record.
Jack Beatty, of course, it's foreign policy tonight and national security. What do you think the big talking points are going to be? Jim Lehrer is going to be pitching the questions. Where do you expect them to be focused?
Well, Iraq and its connection to the war on terror. Kerry is going to argue that it's a diversion from it. Bush, that it's essential, that it's the main front of it. And Kerry will bring forth just today's front page of the Washington Post. Military people think the future is even darker than they seemed to think just a month ago. And details such as we just heard this afternoon from Danny Zwerdling on NPR that no less than 20,000 Americans have been evacuated, injured in one way or another from Iraq. And Bush is going to come back and say, yes, this is a price, and we're sorry that people are dying. We're sorry about the wounded, but America must prevail. We're bringing freedom. We're bringing democracy to the Arab world. Democracy will come back to help us because it'll diffuse the discontents that lead to terrorism in the Arab world. And so the debate will be joined.
Jim Fallows, I'm looking here at the Washington Post article that Jack cites. They quote Stephen Metz, the chairman of regional strategy and planning at the U.S. Army War College, and he says, I don't think the political discourse that we're in the middle of accurately reflects anything. This is on the Iraq front. They keep telling us that Iraqi security forces are the exit strategy, but what I hear from the ground is that they aren't working, you know, that they're even in cahoots with the insurgents. Is it going to be possible, given this tight format, for John Kerry to really get the lever under George Bush on this issue tonight? Or, as you say, George Bush is very good at staying on message. Is he going to be able to do that in spite of the bloody news from Iraq today and this kind of inside the defense establishment criticism of what's going on?
Well, I guess this is what we'll all know at about 3 hours from now. The reason I think this is important, Dr. Metz, who's somebody who I actually have interviewed, his views are extremely representative in my experience of those of the operating professionals of the military and the intelligence community who say that they're just in a terrible situation. And I think the most effective approach for John Kerry might be in various means, underscoring again and again how President Bush seems simply either not to recognize or to be blind and oblivious to the ongoing on the ground reality of what these policies are bringing. I think it's not so much that Senator Kerry can blame him for mistakes in the past, although that's obviously implied, but showing that he is sort of King George III like blind to an emerging reality, that might be an effective approach.
And this debate is compared to Bush versus Gore in the year 2000. Different men, a different contender tonight. How do you expect the chemistry to be different?
I think that there's, the chemistry, these people probably like each other even less than was the case with Bush and Gore. I think that the expectations are different. Clearly, that the Gore people went in feeling on top of the world and as if they could just sort of mop up this untutored, rough talker from Texas. Now, clearly, George Bush's political skills and his time in office are there. And so I think I would hope for purposes of the country and of the debate that the Kerry team has been planning very, very carefully because I know the Bush team has.
Jim Fallows, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We are talking tonight about the Bush-Kerry debate. Bush-Kerry debate number one coming up in about 40 minutes now. We're going to be looking at the format, the expectations game, and the serious challenges facing each candidate tonight. You can join our conversation. Put yourself in the moderator's chair tonight. Give us your best question for the candidates. Take your best shot. And what do you need from George Bush tonight? What do you need from John Kerry? What do you expect to get? What are the stakes? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. The debate is coming toward us very rapidly. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are raising the curtain tonight on the Bush-Kerry debate coming up in just under 40 minutes now. You can join our conversation. What about the media interpretation that will start, what, 3 seconds after the debate? Will the media's conclusion spin your opinion? Will it determine public opinion or not? And how important are these debates for the country? For you, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined tonight by the Atlantic Monthly's James Fallows, our own Jack Beattie, and right now from New Woodstock, New York, Caroline Keating. She's professor of psychology at Colgate University. She studies the elusive quality of charisma. Caroline Keating, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, happy to be here, Tom.
So there will be a lot of hammering on the issues, and we can be sure that Jim Lehrer will be putting a lot of questions around Iraq, around terror, around homeland security, and who knows what else, Sudan, rogue nuclear weapons. A lot of things could come up tonight. And important opinions will be expressed by these candidates. But you look at the nonverbal communication that goes on. What do you see in these two men and the way they communicate nonverbally? What do you expect tonight at the podium?
Well, you're right. I mean, what they say is important, but how they say it is just as important and perhaps even more important to some degree. And, you know, although that sounds shallow of us in a way, we human beings, it's really not. It makes sense because the primary job of leaders is to move us and inspire us, and they do that by connecting with our emotions. And that's all about nonverbal communication, so that's why I look at it so closely.
And look at these two men in particular and their sort of toolkit of nonverbal signifiers, I don't know, in their face, in their body language. How do you read them? How do you imagine them on the dais together?
Yeah, you know, even without speaking, their facial structure sends signals to us. So, for example, if you look at Bush's face, most of us would gaze mostly at his eyes. That's true of human beings. And his eyes are rather narrow. They're close set. His brows are bushy, and they come down over his eyes. And those are all cues for dominance. They exude even a little bit of aggressiveness and perhaps look somewhat deceptive. If you're not a Bush supporter, and you believe that perhaps you've been misled by this candidate, then confirmation of that belief could be found in those narrow, squinty eyes.
And in the face, the body of John Kerry?
John Kerry's face is very interesting. The top half of the face doesn't quite go with the bottom half of the face, and I'm not sure quite what to do with the hair. He kind of sends mixed signals in terms of his status. His eyes are deep set. They droop. They're kind of hooded. And the reaction to those eyes is a bit of a energy sink, in fact. Those are the eyes of someone who's more elderly than John Kerry. And that's in great contrast to the very strong jaw that he has. His jaw is angular and looks very dominant. So his face is really a study of contrast. His hair is very youthful looking and conveys some energy.
So there we have the kind of masks of these men, but of course they'll be speaking and they'll be interacting. What do you expect in the chemistry of these two visages on the stage tonight?
Yeah, when you put these faces in motion, things really change. Kerry needs to express more warmth in his face. He's got enough dominance characteristics, so he needs to warm it up with a full smile, and I would say a decisive smile, not a shy smile, because again, as perceivers, we come to these debates looking for confirmation for what we already believe to be true. So if you think Kerry is a flip-flopper, you're going to find these inconsistent cues in his face as confirmation of what you already believe. Similarly for Bush, if you think he's not quite up to snuff on the issues, intellectually he may be lagging as a candidate, you'll find that in his eyes. They're close set together, and that tends to make people look less intelligent.
And is this really the stuff of charisma, the stuff that engenders trust or distrust more than what they say, or in what proportion do you see them?
Well, some studies have estimated that at least 70% of what goes on in any human communication is owed and to the nonverbal communication, the appearance of the individual and their gestures. So it's a pretty important signaling system we've got going.
I want to begin to bring our callers in. We've asked them what question they would put from the moderator's chair tonight. I want to see what they've got to say. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Jason is calling from Minneapolis. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
As one of the guests on your show said, George Bush seems to be unaware of what the reality is in Iraq. And a big thing in his party and his platform lately seems to be that John Kerry can't make up his mind, that he's, you know, but George Bush claims himself to be, you know, so much staying the course. He's made up his mind, and that's what they're going to do.
So what's your question for the man, Jason?
My question would be, don't we need to allow for the possibility that our strategy needs to change as intelligence comes to light, as the reality in Iraq changes and varies? And he doesn't seem to be willing to be aware of that or to roll with that.
Jason, we've got the question, and we thank it. Jim Fallows, thank you for it. Jim Fallows, there's a question from Minneapolis. Put yourself in the president's shoes, watching, looking back on his tapes as you have. If Jim Lehrer launches that question to him, what kind of answer?
If he launched that question in just that form, it would be relatively easy for the president to knock back, because the president would say, you know, of course we must always be attentive to the changing signals, and we are, et cetera, et cetera. I think what Jim Lehrer could actually do is ask the president, what signs exactly would it take to convince him that the policy needed changing? Because, for example, you know, the setup for the question could say, when violence goes down in Iraq, the president says that's a sign of success. When the violence increases, he says it's a sign that the rebels are getting desperate.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there any factual situation that would convince the president to change course? Force the president to name what the factual circumstance would be that would make him reconsider his course.
Jack Beatty, the president has often responded to this kind of question by claiming the far horizon, the big vision, the long-term game.
Yes, he will. I mean, I mentioned it before. We're out to liberate the world, but we're going to begin in the Arab world. But, you know, both these candidates, if I may say, just to pick up on Bush's bushy brows, both these candidates are up against the medium. Near the end of his life, Teddy White, the political reporter, despairingly wrote, "Television is American politics." And he thought that was bad news for America because television's a medium of selling. We watch it vulnerable to the sell and cynical about the product being sold. Now, Bush comes into the debate, to a large extent, pre-sold with the nimbus of the presidency around him. Kerry has to sell himself and his ideas in a medium that cues vision to the superficial manifestations of personality. You know, it's like it's the way the TV treats issues, the way the Miss America pageant treats the talent show. Let's get on to the bathing suits.
Yeah. Ouch.
You know, when you think about it, did Nixon's sweaty lip mean that he was less worthy to be president than Kennedy? Did Reagan's "there he goes," did that mean anything at all? Then, after they go through selling themselves as the product, standing forth as products, they have to undergo that deflationary gauntlet of the talking heads, the gas bags on cable news, who reduce issues to personality and politics, and not one in 20 of whom could tell you anything about Kerry's health care program or discuss the pros and cons of Bush's, you know, health savings account. So I guess my point is that that the TV repels deliberation and makes elections really a referenda on the bubble popularity.
And yet there's such a powerful logic in a democracy to wanting to see the candidates for the top office in the land debate. Jim Fallows, let me put that to you in two ways. First of all, if Kerry were asked something like the same question that our Minneapolis caller raised, how's he likely to respond to that? Is it going to show that there's really credible distance between him and George Bush in a material way? And secondly, Jack raises the issue of the superficiality, but John Kerry has ridden this same face and hair and lanky body to a lot of success in politics. You know, should we all of a sudden be shy about factoring it in?
Just a brief word on each. If Kerry were presented the same question, you know, his challenge with every question and answer in this exchange is both to put forward some of the specific policy would do, but through both spoken and unspoken communication to advance a critique of the administration. And so he would say, yes, we'd use this and that signal to change course, and the administration hasn't done it that way, and I would do it this way, and showing in a calm but sort of intense way that he would do things differently. As for TV, I think it's a very interesting question of whether, if TV on the whole could be uninvented, whether humanity would be better off if that were so. But clearly, it's the way we do business now. And the one particular thing which is not inevitable, and I wish there was some way to control, is what the whole punditocracy is going to do the instant this debate is over. because however superficial the debate itself might be, it will seem like, you know, the deepest platonic dialogue compared to the winning and losing type discussion that happens afterwards. So I wish our colleagues would sort of rise to the responsibility of talking something about what the guys are actually saying.
And where do you see, Jim Fallows, the expectations game, which for better or worse is out there? Where do you see it sit as we go into this debate tonight?
I think it sits actually in a way that's unique in George Bush's experience, because every single time he's been the heavy underdog in the debates, not necessarily in the elections, but in the debates, the idea has been the other guy is so silver-tongued and Bush is a man of few and simple words that the debates no one expects him to do very well in. This is the first time he's come in expected to do well, and we'll see if that has any effect on the sort of post-game spin.
Jim Fallows, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
James Fallows, national editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. We are with Caroline Keating from Colgate University and our own Jack Beatty, and joined now from Washington by Adam Clymer. He is political director at the National Annenberg Election Survey at the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Adam Clymer, thanks for being with us tonight.
Pleasure to join you.
You've been rattling the bars of the cage about exactly what Jack Beatty and Jim Fallows are talking about here on how the debate's outcome will be analyzed immediately upon its conclusion. What are you hoping that the media will look at?
Well, I hope they'll look at what these guys actually say and not how they say it, at the plausibility of what they say, at the accuracy of what they say. I think there is plainly plenty of room for that. I think if John Kerry talks blithely about how he'll get more nations to aid, first of all, I hope Jim Lehrer says, well, what is there? Why would they help you when they wouldn't help Bush? And then I hope that the newspapers use their foreign affairs people, or the people who know the plausibility of this argument, tap into their foreign correspondents too. Maybe not tonight. Maybe that takes a day's worth of reporting. But if it does, treat it as a front page story on Saturday instead of. By and large, the press relegates the fact checking stories to the inside pages.
You look back to the year 2000 debates and say it happened then, that lots of inaccuracies were not really put front and center after those debates. Do you expect it will happen this time, Adam Clymer?
Well, I urge that it happen this time in an op-ed in the New York Times. And friends in newsrooms tell me, boy, that had some influence. I'll wait and see. There's nothing about the press's record so far in this campaign which ought to make you optimistic. I mean, they spent the month of August dealing with Kerry's Vietnam record, and the beginning of September dealing with Bush's Air Force record. And, you know, that was 35 years ago, and it might be a faint clue to what they would do as president, but there are a lot bigger things to deal with. And Jim Fallows wished that television be disinvented. I'd be willing to
fat
compromise.
Chance.
Pardon?
Fat chance, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd be willing to settle for a half step, and that would be to disinvent cable television. I'd give up ESPN and my chance to watch baseball games if we could give up the sort of idiotic. Any charge made in a political campaign is deserving of respect. So if these bozos come and claim that Kerry didn't deserve his medals, well, you know, let's treat them. Let's put them on, get someone on to say he did, and leave the question in doubt.
Now, it's interesting how all that's going to work. As I understand it, the different TV operations will be running the camera, the pool camera that's in the debate hall, and as I understand, Fox News will be running the camera tonight. Part of the agreement is that they're not supposed to show the candidates' facial responses to their opponents' comments, and there's been some pushback on that from the network, saying, well, we're going to do that anyway. But tonight, as I understand it, everybody broadcasting this will be taking their feed from Fox News and Fox News cameraman. Just an interesting fact in an era where news is on any number of fronts becoming politicized. Vincent's calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Vincent. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, the question I would have with the president is I would say that many people find the country a lot less safe. America is now basically hated in the world. And also, I think that America's democracy we're trying to foist on Iraq. For instance, there's stories that the CIA was backing certain parties so we would get the party that the USA would like. Also, the thing over the torturing of prisoners. I mean, we've lost all moral authority. And the other thing that I think is disgraceful, I saw Arnold Spector on the TV last night, and the argument the Republicans are using, if there's no terrorist incident between now and the election, that's because Bush has been doing a good job. And if there is, he's the man to be there because he's stronger than Kerry. Well, I mean, that's utter garbage.
So you've got a clip full of questions there, Vincent. Let us pick those up. Thanks for your call. Caroline Keating, please.
Let me jump in here. Yeah, there's a psychological component that's missing from this discussion, and it's an interesting one. Adam makes a good point. It would be wonderful if we as voters were detailed in our study of the policies and the proposals that these candidates put forward. But in fact, when voters are under threat, when they feel threatened in this post 9/11 world, we tend to scan our environment differently. We tend to be superficial, and we look for cues that are immediate, emotional, and those are the meaningful cues to us. So
let me ask you this then, Caroline. But if Jim Lehrer were to put questions in a very provocative way, like our caller from Chapel Hill did, and put Abu Ghraib in the president's face and say, the world hates America now, what do you think is the winning expression for George Bush in response to that kind of, you know, tough challenge? What's the likely expression?
If he's able to, the best thing he could do would be to continue looking confident about what he did, even though most of the country now believes that we made a mistake in going to war the way we did. Note that he's ahead in the polls. Why is that? The reason is because we as perceivers, I think, feel threatened enough to go with a leader who looks strong. It's a kind of a rally around the flag effect. And that effect is very potent, very powerful.
Caroline Keating, it's been great having you tonight. We've got to take a short break. I want to thank you so much for coming on, Caroline.
You're welcome.
Caroline Keating, professor of psychology at Colgate University. She studies the elusive quality of charisma. Well, that will be on display one way or another by one candidate or another in the debate coming up in just about, 20 minutes now. We're looking at Bush-Kerry, debate number one tonight. Adam Clymer is with us, our own Jack Beatty. Much more to come. You can join this conversation tonight. How important are these debates for this election? What do they tell us? What do they obscure? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Bush-Kerry debate number one, coming up in just under 20 minutes now. You can join the conversation tonight. What's your question for the candidates at the podium just outside Miami in Coral Gables, Florida tonight? What do you expect on the issues from George Bush and John Kerry? What do you expect from the on-stage chemistry tonight? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined tonight by Adam Clymer, political director at the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. And Teg is calling right now from Waterford, Pennsylvania. Hi, Teg. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Ashberg. I just want to say I love your show.
Oh, thanks so much, Teg. What's on your mind?
I have a question for Senator Kerry. You claim that you're so proud of your 20-year record in the Senate, but yet you've spent most of your campaign on Vietnam and undermining the presidency. How come you're not addressing what you've done in the Senate and what you've done for America?
So why don't you stand on your senatorial record, you'd ask, Ted?
Exactly.
Got it. Thanks so much for throwing that in. I want to turn for a response to that to Berkeley, California, and George Lakoff, professor of linguistics at the University of California, Berkeley, author of Moral Politics, How Liberals and Conservatives Think. George Lakoff, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be on point.
Here is our caller, and he wants to launch this question to John Kerry. Why aren't you campaigning on your record in the U.S. Senate on the issue and on the manner of response? What would you expect from Senator Kerry?
Because he's running for president, not senator.
Well, senators deal with national issues, with international issues.
Sure, and he's discussed them at very great length during his campaign. However, the news has not, the media has not covered most of what he said.
So you would say, I have run on my record, and yet, you know, a Senate record is so long and detailed, it's kind of
no,
hard.
No, he wouldn't. He would say, I have run for the presidency based on what I've learned in the Senate.
Based on what I've learned, that's a way to turn it and to put it to his advantage. George Lakoff, you're a linguist. What do you look for in a debate like we're going to hear tonight, in the framing, in the manner of expression from any two contenders and from these in particular?
Well, remember first that this debate is not primarily about the issues. It's only secondarily about it. The issues are being used in the following way. Most voters vote on the basis of their values and their identity with the candidates. They're looking to say, that person has my values, I trust that person. That's what they have to project today. And the means for doing this is, you know, supposedly discussing the issues, but that's secondary. So what you're going to find is the problems that each of them has in connecting with their audience. First, Kerry has to show he's not a flip-flopper. How do you do that? One, in your voice and your manner. It has to be consistently strong and straightforward and unhesitating. Second, he has to address the issue straight on. He has to show, as the record shows, he's been completely consistent. He hasn't been flip-flopping, but he hasn't conveyed that. He hasn't found the language and the short language, the precise language, the few words that would convey just what his position on these issues has always been and still is at present. That's a hard job, and he's got to be able to do that tonight. In addition, he has to be able to separate out the Iraq war from the fight against terrorism. He's got to say that the Iraq war was a diversion from the fight against terrorism, that both are failing, and that, basically, Bush has weakened the country. And he's got to use the word weak, very importantly. He's got to raise the question of, are we weaker militarily? Are we weaker diplomatically? Are we weaker economically? Are we weaker educationally? Mm-hmm. And so on. And since Bush has not been able to get our allies to go along with him, then he seems to be a weak leader. He's not a strong leader.
But
strong
as you say, a lot of this is in presentation, and we've got 2-minute windows, 90-second windows, 30-second windows tonight. George Bush speaks in very direct, declarative sentences that are not long and complicated. Does that give him an advantage, an unassailable advantage to the linguist's eye?
Gives him a major advantage, and there's another advantage. George Bush has used the products of the conservative think tanks and the conservative language institutions. So over the past 35 years, conservatives have invested over $2 billion in constructing 43 think tanks, and they have come up with ideas and language that George Bush is using over and over and over again. And the Kerry campaign has not combated that language, and it doesn't have the same institutional backing.
Conservatives the overwhelming majority of the country's universities are Democrat-leaning. That sounds like institutional ambience, at least, supportive ambience.
It doesn't work. It's not unified, and it's not directed toward language, and it's not directed toward getting a unified overview of what progressive thought is, and it's not connected to the media in any effective, unified way like the conservatives agree on language. They pick their language and they go and agree on it. You try to get all the academics in the country to agree on any language.
Forget about it. Adam Clymer, I want to put this central observation of George Lakoff's to you, that the debate tonight is not about the issues, that it's about identification with candidates. It's about conveying values. You're the issues guy. What do you think when you hear that?
Well, I don't disagree, but I'd put it somewhat differently. I mean, I think the issues are there. We've got, through the Annenberg survey, we find A majority of the public thinks it was a mistake to go into Iraq. A majority of the public disapproves of how Bush is handling the war in Iraq. And a big majority, 56 to 32, thinks the United States is less respected in the world than it was before then, before the Bush administration. What is there for Kerry is a remarkable set of opportunities. The point, the problem is not that Bush is in very strong shape, but that Kerry has been unable to persuade the public, despite saluting when he gave his acceptance address, that he would be an effective leader, an effective replacement for Bush. So I think, you know, I think he has to be able to articulate the kinds of things that the public agrees with, the points I just made, but he has to be able to do it in a way that makes it seem that he knows what he's talking about and can be firm and effective. Language isn't irrelevant, but if he says it in ways that that don't make any sense, I would hope that the press would point that out. And some of that, much of what Lakoff, George Lakoff just said, is true, but some of it depends on how the media handles it afterwards, how well these things are explained. It isn't self-evident. There's a lot of times in the past, the immediate reaction, the quickest polling has been shown one candidate seemed to do better, and then after a couple of days of being battered by press indications that it went the other way, the public changes its mind.
So the less scrutiny, the more the kind of psychological factor grows here. Mike is calling from Salem, North Carolina. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Good. A couple of things. One, John Kerry has placed a lot of emphasis on saying that he has the ability or will have the ability if he's elected to bring other countries and their troops involved in Iraq, bring them to Iraq. Question is, does he really think, he says he's going to do that, but what good will that do? Do you really think that a few hundred more troops or a few thousand troops from several countries will stop the acts of terrorism and the insurgency and the killing? Is that really going to stop it? So what good is that going to do? He's placing a great deal of emphasis on that. And then number two, it's kind of an overall statement that because this is television, this is going to be a personality contest more than anything else, I would imagine. Both of these men are programmed. They're consulted up to the hilt. They know what their answers are going to be. How are we going to get any kind of candor or any real understanding of what either of these men really think? It's what will have the most impact and serve their purposes as far as consultants are concerned.
Mike, those are both great questions, and let us pick them up. Thanks for your call. Jack Beattie, let me go to you on here on John Kerry and Iraq. And Mike points out, and everyone's heard it from John Kerry by this point, his solution is a more multilateral approach to Iraq. And yet that leaves the United States in Iraq, and it's unclear exactly who would ante up what help to the U.S. Does that leave him with a fundamentally weak answer on Iraq? It's a bed that George Bush made, but John Kerry has to speak to it.
I think Mike is exactly right. It does leave him with a weak hand. It's an illusion. I think everybody knows that. Changing presidents is not going to suddenly make the French public think, by gosh, we got to get our soldiers blown up just the way you're doing. No one's going to do it. And even on the money, I doubt there'd be much help, although that might actually change. So Kerry, his positive program about Iraq is based on an illusion. His critique about the Bush handling of the war is factual, is balanced. You know, he's got it all. But when he gets to what you will do, I just think it's inescapable that is as much illusion as Bush's, you know, Boy Scout hopes that, oh, the election is going to come and democracy is going to come and the Middle East will be reborn as a democracy. That, too, is an illusion. And I think that may be what this Army fellow was talking about that you quoted from the Washington Post, who says the campaign really isn't talking about anything. Neither candidate is talking about anything real about doing something to Iraq. I mean, if Kerry really wanted to win in Iraq, he would reinforce by 120,000 or 150,000 troops tomorrow, which General Shinseki said two years ago was the only way to cow this rebellion, but he won't.
He won't, and George Bush certainly won't talk about that either. George Lakoff, is President Bush vulnerable here? Al Hunt in the Wall Street Journal today saying that, you know, look at mission accomplished, it wasn't so. You look at Bush, and in many dimensions, he's all hat and no cattle. How does John Kerry answer the Iraq future question, and how do you see George Bush's vulnerability on that question?
I think the old hat and no cattle is exactly right. One of the things that Kerry must do is undercut Bush's credibility, first by pointing out that he's weak in the country and that he's weak and not a strong leader at all, and secondly, by undercutting what most people perceive as Bush's integrity and honesty. He's already started to do that by saying that Bush has not leveled with the American people on weapons of mass destruction, on the ties between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and so on. He's got to undercut that idea, and I think the way to do it is by bringing up the notion of trust and betrayal of that trust. When you send people into war to die, possibly to die, you have a responsibility to tell them the real reasons why they're going there. And Bush told them they were going there to protect their hometowns against terrorists. If that was false and Bush knew it, then he betrayed the trust that we gave him. And that is something that he appears to have done over and over again. Kerry has never actually come out and said that out loud. But it's important to say it out loud and to get the question asked.
Make it an issue of trust, Adam Clymer.
And betrayal of trust.
Betrayal of trust and try and pin that on the president. Adam Clymer, can you see John Kerry doing that tonight?
Well, I think George Lakoff is right that he needs to try to do that. That's a tough sell because the country finds Bush likable. It finds Kerry remote. You know, it's late in the day to try to shake the images about these traits.
And yet it's the persuadable voters that are in the gun sights here tonight, and they think the country is on track in significantly greater proportion than the general voter, 56% compared to 49% for all voters. They're much less optimistic. 25% of the persuadables, this is the Wall Street Journal NBC poll, think the economy will get better over the next year compared to 43% of all voters. 26% think Iraq was worth it. 40% of all voters, the persuadables, Jack Beatty, look like they may be open to John Kerry if he can reach out to them.
Yes, I mean, I just think that he's got the materials for the case. He just hasn't made it. He blanded himself at that convention and tried to run on his resume. He did that in Massachusetts, too, until he realized that campaigns are about issues. And he found his voice, I think, 2 weeks ago at NYU in that harsh critique of Bush's handling of the war with his coda of illusion tacked on, namely, the Allies will help us if you elect me. But the attack was very effective. And if he picks up on that, he could begin to speak to those persuadables, those doubts they have that the country's on the right course and that Bush indeed is the man to steer that course over the next 4 years.
And very quickly, Jack, you reminded me today this is not the first time George and John have met in debate, though it was a lot less formal last time.
Yeah, reportedly, they had a debate, an impromptu debate in the locker room at Yale, where the nervy, bold sophomore, George Bush, challenged the head of the debate club, Kerry, on the issue of busing, school busing. Kerry defending busing as necessary for integration, and Bush strongly attacking it. And Bush, from all accounts, held his own.
Well, years later, it's redux. Jack, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And George Lakoff at UC Berkeley, linguist, thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
And Adam Clymer at the Annenberg Center, University of Pennsylvania, thanks so much for coming on.
Happy to be with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.